Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Is This a Ghost? I'm Clayton Smith, and every week I tell a real ghost story from real history to my real friend, Patrick Dean, who does not take it real seriously. Okay, now you do it.
I have Olympic fever.
Do you?
I have 106 degree Fahrenheit Olympic fever.
Oh, no, you're terminal.
Terminal
fever.
Yeah, it's not good. Ibuprofen is not taking the edge off of it. I'm into it. I'm game. I'm all over it.
I love the Olympics, but I have not watched them at all this year, except for the clips that you sent me, which so far today includes, a downhill skier getting racked right in the balls and going, ah!
It was horrible. They talk about how those poles are like, or the gates over like breakaway. Oh yeah, they're breakaway. They don't hurt. It's still a piece of like PVC pipe just sticking right up out of the ground.
Yeah, so. And it's cold out there. Mm-hmm. That's not helping any of the pieces involved in that collision are not helped by the fact that it's cold out there.
And I don't know if you're aware, but downhill skiers underneath of that like thin, you know, paper thin leotard, right to the bare skin, nothing at all underneath of there.
Gotta be aerodynamic.
Mm-hmm. Aerodynamic and as light as a feather.
Not even hair down there.
No.
No, you know he's clean shaven as a fucking newborn. Yeah.
He might have been tucking, but I don't know. I don't even know that.
No, he can't. Yeah, I don't know. He definitely wasn't using tape.
No.
Because it's weight.
Right.
It's extra weight. That poor guy. Mm. Oh, no, monsieur. the luge tag team.
I did.
Where you got to lift up to hit that. That feels cruel.
Mm-hmm.
You just luged real hard, which I think is probably a pretty easy sport, actually. I think you just lie down and let go, let God.
Yeah.
It's how luge works. But then, I mean, to go from a straight lie back and then you got to like hoist yourself up to tap this, that's core work, my friend. That's bad.
Yeah. Not interested.
I'm starting to think I'll never be in the Olympics.
Stella was telling me that she disliked the Winter Olympics because she prefers the Summer Olympics because she can, quote, gauge how good I am relative to everybody because I understand what's going on. And I said, but honey, that's the beauty of the Winter Olympics.
Free yourself of that.
There is no way to know if you would be good or bad at any of these things. I was watching curling today, and in between throws, like in the middle of an inning or whatever, in between throws, I don't know what they're called. There's like 10 of them. And in between throws, the players were going up to a little desk and eating finger food and then going back to throw the next stone.
What kind of
sport has hors d'oeuvres in the middle of it?
Obviously, the Olympics are incredibly high level sport.
Yes.
And I assume that must be true for every sport out there. I assume that even curling, these are like the best out there. Having said that, I do think I could be an Olympic curler. never touched a broom in my life, but I think I could do it. I will need to learn how to skate. That's the one thing keeping me from Olympic curling.
This is the beauty of it. You do not wear skates.
You just walk on the ice.
You have a rubber, rubber-soled shoe on your left foot, and you have a Teflon toe like glued to your right foot.
All right, you're in this.
I've watched a lot of curling. It's the one event I will actually sit down and watch an entire like match of.
So here's how I think you probably get to Olympic level curler.
Mm-hmm.
You care enough to practice just enough times to know which foot does which thing for you at which time. And most people are like, this is so stupid. I quit. But if you can persevere, you could be like, it is stupid, but I'll try a few more times. Then you can go to the Olympics and be a curler.
You'll say, one of the folks from the curling club will give me a ride home. You guys can just go. And then you're basically an Olympic curler at that point.
If you want to become a curler, what is your path? Who do you talk to?
There has to be state competitions, I would imagine, then like nationals.
But how do you even get started there? How do you find a team of curlers?
So there is a curling club in St. Louis, Missouri.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sure there's one in Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Virginia Curling Club. Maybe this is my midlife crisis.
Ooh, that would be. Let's see.
Maybe I become an Olympic curler.
Let me think. Okay. Hey, what were the criteria again?
Let's see. Enough stick-to-itiveness to be bored by what you're doing, but do it a few more times anyway.
Okay. Is it
also like snacks?
It seems like it would be unnecessarily expensive too. Those stones look really, really pricey.
I wonder if you could join a club, but be like, oh, I left my stone at home, and you could do that a few times. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm so sorry. I keep doing this.
Right.
That'll get you pretty far for a while. Yeah, of course, there's a curling club of Virginia. So, they're in Richmond. That's 90 minutes away.
It's not far.
Virginia's first curling club. I bet you it's Virginia's only curling club, friends. I'm gonna consider it.
Okay. Okay.
I'm gonna consider it. I do like the idea of walking slowly out on the ice and gently pushing something, because I'm great at bar shuffleboard.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure it's the same.
Very
thing.
Good at it.
Except you are like your body is the hand, right? Like,
yeah,
your
exactly.
whole body is the hand.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the scope is different, mm-hmm. Cosmically speaking. But,
right.
You know, the mechanics are the same.
Yeah.
Probably.
Got to be the same thing.
Yeah. What's been your favorite moment of the Olympics so far?
Gosh. The guy getting hit in the dick was real funny.
was real good.
Oh, man. I also really liked the Canadian team repeatedly cheating at curling. That was also really funny.
What are they doing, those fucking Canadians?
When you push the stone, you know, you push a stone and then you let go of the stone, right?
Yeah.
And what they do is they let go of the stone and then at the last second they give it a little boop. Like, they just give a little adjustment. You can't
give a boop?
You cannot give it a boop.
Well, are they being called out on this?
That's the fun thing. Curling does not have judges that have any sort of power over the match. It is a it's a gentlemanly sport that is self-policed.
Okay. Okay. All right. You know what? Less curling, more breakdancing. I want to see ice breakdancing. And I want to see whatever her name from South Africa or whatever.
Raygun?
Raygun.
Yeah.
I want to see Raygun out there on the ice. I was going to say, you know what? It was the last Summer Olympics that mm-hmm. the guy hit the high jump with his dick, right?
Yes, that's correct. Yes.
Well, I tell you, there's a theme coming on here.
Mm-hmm. You throw that much spandex around and this will happen pretty much every week.
It's really amazing that this doesn't happen on more Olympics. This is all well and good, but do you want to hear a ghost story?
Sure, why not? Spooky time. Woo, spooky time. Woo, spooky time.
I asked you last week and you didn't know what story we were telling. Mm-hmm.
You can ask.
Okay, what are we telling today, Pat?
We're doing the third part of Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
So close, so close. You're very close.
Is it the fourth? I don't know.
It's the fourth part of
Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. Okay, I was close.
For a second,
I love some Paul Newman. God, I love Paul Newman.
Oh, man. And Robert Redford? Be mm-hmm. serious. There was a moment today I thought, like, I checked my calendar, and I was like, wouldn't it be fun, for me specifically and no one else, if we extended the Bonnie and Clyde episode until April Fool's episode, and then there's no ghost, and that's just been, like, the longest, slowest burn April Fool's joke.
I like that.
I like it too, but I thought we should. It's good to keep our fans and subscribers, so maybe we shouldn't do that. But yeah, so we're on episode 3 of Bonnie and Clyde, and I am pleased to report this is the final episode of the Bonnie and Clyde saga.
Oof.
It's on to bigger and better things next time.
I wonder which one of them is going to die. Bonnie's not in great.
Stay tuned to find out.
Yeah, I mean, if feel free to skip recap here, but would you like me to recap? I can recap.
I'd love to see you try.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Okay. Bonnie and Clyde are a girl and a boy, in that order.
So far, flawless. Yes.
And they get into some trouble. They do some bank robbing. Bonnie broke Clyde out of jail with a gun, I think, at one point, and that set mm-hmm. them off on their wild adventures. Mm-hmm. And they've had shootouts. They had a horrible car crash at one point that burned or boiled up one of Bonnie's legs. So her leg is in real bad shape.
It's not good.
And Yeah, and and you're all caught up. That's it. That's the whole thing.
Okay. Yeah, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. When we last saw our friends Bonnie and Clyde, they were almost caught in a trap, but Clyde sensed it at the last minute, and he said, "No, thank you. We're not going to stop here." And they got away, not entirely unscathed, but they got a bullet wound to the leg each. But they're free. They escaped the law. But also, right around that time, a grand jury came down with a guilty verdict for a murder warrant for both Bonnie and Clyde.
Ooh.
And so that's where we wrapped up episode 2. So now the heat is really on. Now they're both wanted for murder in a officially.
Mm-hmm.
And again, Clyde had been wanted for murder for a long time, but this is Bonnie's first official warrant. So here we go. Oh, you know what I forgot to mention before the ghost story? folks, if you're not listening to Ghost Plus, and I only say that, I know you don't want to hear a Ghost Plus plug right now, but I only say this because if you are not listening to Ghost Plus, here's what you missed. You missed last Friday a ghostie with my friend and fellow author, Ben Wallace, and we did a story called Boy Scout Lane. And all I'm going to say is in that episode, we got to a point where it made sense for Stephen Luna to then draw an illustration of Miss Frizzle on the magic school bus slaughtering children with a cast iron CB radio. And I think if you don't listen to the episode, you're doing yourself no favors in life. It went a little off the rails. And that's on Ghost Plus. And you can get a free 7-day subscription if you go to isthisaghost.com. Go check it out. Anyway, so back to Bonnie and Clyde. So now the police are ready to go hard on them. But Bonnie and Clyde, they have no intention of slowing down.
Mm-hmm.
And again, they're in this kind of virtuous circle where virtuous may be the wrong word for it, but they can't stop because they can't live a normal life anymore.
Right.
So they're spiraling.
Mm-hmm.
But they think, you know what? Instead of slowing down, we're going to speed up.
Mm-hmm.
It's time to.
The only way to get out of a spiral is to speed up and maybe go back the opposite direction a little bit.
Some space movie about that. I saw.
Yes.
They did that.
Mm-hmm.
It worked. And it totally worked in that
movie. It's called
The Core. And Dermot? No. What's the. What's that guy's name?
Aaron Eckhart.
Aaron Eckhart's it, yes. Who's the.
The Dermot Mulroney, isn't it?
Dermot Mulroney, is it? Yeah. Yeah.
I think so. That? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. He's great.
What I love about The Core, and I know I just kind of like set this up because it's not actually about The Core, but I love that, not giving anything away, but in the final climax of.
I'm not giving away, but here's.
The final climax of the movie, the point of the movie is you have to get all the way to the core of the Earth. And get it spitting again because the core of the Earth has slowed down or stopped or something like that. Which apparently, from what I've read, is actually not a big deal at all. This happens all the time. But
Wait, what?
The core of the Earth like changes directions and stops and starts. And it's not really that big of a deal.
Huh. All right.
But they take their little submarine all the way through to the center of the Earth, going through like, you know, thousands and thousands of miles of magma to get there to get the core spinning again, and then they have to escape the center of the Earth before, you know, everything blows up or whatever. And just as they turn around to escape, to go back out to the surface and get out of there alive, the screen fades to black and it says 4 hours later. And then it comes back and it's them escaping. Like, did you really think this movie was so believable that people were going to say, oh, you can't get from the core to the surface of the Earth in anything less than 4 hours?
Well, how long do you think it would take to get to the surface of the Earth?
You know, this
4 hours is pretty quick.
4 hours is pretty quick. I'll be honest though. Not a lot of research, not a lot of data on that one. I don't really know.
Okay. Yeah. I never saw The Core.
Oh, it's a good one.
Is it
so bad?
Is this another, iTag watch that we're going to start watching movies. Yeah. Right after Man from Snowy River. okay. Anyway, that has nothing to do with this. And so Bonnie and Clyde are not slowing down. They're going harder. And remember, so back in part one, we talked about, and you actually previewed this in the recap.
Mm-hmm.
Clyde was in prison. He was in Eastham Prison Farm in Texas. It was a terrible experience.
Mm-hmm. He was abused. He was abused.
He was abused. He was yes. sexually assaulted there. And if you'll recall, this is his whole stated reason for actually doing all this crime, because he wants to shut down, if not the entire prison system, at least Eastham Prison. He wants revenge. And so now there's all this new heat on them, and they decide this. I think they know it's not going to go great for them.
Right. Yeah.
I think they have a premonition. And so they're like, if we're going to do this, we're doing this now. And so on January 13th, 1934, Bonnie and Clyde drive out to the perimeter of the Eastham Prison. And they are joined by two other men, Floyd Hamilton and Jimmy Mullins.
Two men that do not understand how money works, because there is this is not the job they expect, I can imagine.
You'll be surprised to learn then that Jimmy Mullins actually was a former inmate at Eastham with Clyde. So he knows the whole deal. And he knows, obviously, the campus very well. So he's an important person to have. Floyd Hamilton, he has a younger brother who was locked up in Eastham at this time. And so Floyd's going every other week to visit. And this is not a fun fact. It's just a fun aside, but I'm going to do the thing anyway.
Wham!
Hamilton's brother was serving 266 years for auto theft, armed robbery, and murder.
I can't imagine that auto theft and armed robbery had a whole lot of bearing on that. That might be like a couple years tacked on at the end.
Yeah, I think just for good measure. We haven't seen anyone live this long, but 250 is, I don't know, it doesn't feel impossible.
With modern medicine, I mean, we've almost got this tuberculosis thing kicked, so.
we've got this whole stock of arsenic. He might live forever. Oh, man. So anyway, so they go out there. They take two Colt 45 automatics and several clips of ammo, and they hide them inside an old tire inner tube.
Okay.
Now, the perimeter of Eastham Prison is marked by a barbed wire fence.
Sure.
But nothing more than a barbed wire fence.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So Floyd and Jimmy, they take the inner tube and they sneak through the fence onto prison property. And they make their way to a drainage ditch, and like they know,
yeah,
they know like when the guards are going to be there and when the workers are there and stuff. So
yeah, this is like that guy that does the secret camping on YouTube, right? Like camps under overpasses. Oh, you have to know this guy. You don't know this guy?
Camps under overpasses.
Steve something. I don't remember his exact name. His whole thing is he camps in like obvious places. But, he'll just pull off the side of a clover leaf in like a wooded area, and or have someone drop him off, and then he will just camp there for the evening and document the entire thing.
Why?
I've watched probably 10 45 minute videos of him doing this. I don't know why. I still don't know why. But that's
content.
It's kind of what it sounds like. Really?
A little bit. Mm-hmm. A little bit. Sneak in when no one's looking and just kind of do your thing.
Yeah, just camp. Have a nice camp out.
Yeah, now these gentlemen are not going to camp out.
Oh, okay, never mind.
In the farm prison.
Not relevant, sorry.
So they make it to a drainage ditch, and they toss the inner tube down into it. And as soon as they drop the inner tube, guard dogs start going nuts.
Oh.
In the distance from the main section of the farm. They're like, oh, whoa, time to go. So they turn, they beat ass back to the to the fence. They manage to slip back out before the dogs or the guards find them. And they jump in the car. They're off.
Okay.
A couple days later, an inmate, and because this has all been orchestrated with guys on the inside.
Right, yeah.
Because you got the one guy visiting a prison every other week. So a couple days later, an inmate named Aubrey Skelly, he goes out. And he's not a groundskeeper, but he has this kind of very privileged position in the work camp where he gets to go out and just check things and make sure everything's
fine. Check the barbed wire fence, make sure nothing's
Because you want to entrust that sort of thing to a prisoner for sure.
The guards are way too busy asleep in the guard tower or something like that.
Yeah, you want to give him access to your accounting books, and he's definitely not going to rat you out.
You want to give him a Rita Hayworth poster and a little
yeah, spoon. What's the harm? Yeah. What's the harm? So Huey goes out there, and he goes to the drainage ditch, and he retrieves the inner tube.
Oh.
And he manages to smuggle it back into the dormitory building.
Oh, that's not good. Well, I mean,
for well, him, it depends really on which good. Side yeah. you're on. Yeah. You fucking narc. So he brings it in, and he gives it to another inmate named Joe Palmer.
Mm.
Joe Palmer is in for 25 years for robbery.
Okay. He knows how to use a gun.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So he takes the inner tube. He hides it in his mattress.
Mm-hmm.
And he gives a little wink. A little wink.
What an uncomfortable night's sleep this guy has ahead of him.
That is. Ow! He gives a heads up to yet another inmate named Harry Methvin. Harry Methvin?
I'm gonna need a mugshot of old Harry Methvin.
I bet we got one. He's gonna stick around in the story for a little while. So let's see. Harry Methvin. There we go.
Is he making the Methvin family proud?
There's old Methvin.
All right.
Smoldering.
He is. Yeah. This is
smoldering.
This is very difficult to pay attention to right now.
Mm-hmm.
I love the description here. Hair light brown, eyes blue, complex, fair.
Fair.
Marks and scars.
One marks and scars.
One dim horizontal cut scar left middle finger first joint and dagger pierced and lettered love right forearm inner.
Hell yeah. He's got, if he lost some face weight, he's got a bit of a young Elvis thing going
on. Yeah, there's some face weight. This is definitely Elvis after being in prison for 10 years. This is, Elvis has been in the yard for 10 years, bulking up.
I like they just like affix this, the number to his collar somehow. I don't think he's holding that up.
He's actually using his pecs to hold it in place is what I'm saying. That's
very impressive. Very impressive. So that's Methvin. So keep him in mind. He'll be around.
I will.
couldn't stop if I tried. So he gives a heads up. So Palmer gives a heads up to Methvin and also to Hilton Bybee. And the four of them, so Bybee and Methvin and Palmer and Skelly, they're all in it. They're like, all right, tomorrow's the day.
Mm-hmm.
Tomorrow's the day it's happening. On January 16th, Bonnie and Clyde drive up to the barbed wire fence. And not long after they park, a work crew of prisoners is let out near the fence, as is normal.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to clear some brush piles to get ready for spring planting. And among that group are Hamilton and Palmer. Each of them has a loaded 45 automatic in their pants.
Oof.
They also brought the guns. Hey! Now, one of them, I don't remember which one, I think either Hamilton or Palmer is not supposed to be in this work group, but he's like, if I go out there, they'll probably let me get there, and then they'll make me go back because they just are kind of mean to people, right?
Sure.
And he's right. So he does. So he gets out there, and then once they're there, two of the guards, like five guards, I think, two of the guards get together, and one is like, hey, he's not on the crew today, and they're figuring out what to do. And it's while those guards are talking that Palmer walks up to them and he acts like he's going to ask him a question, which is not unheard of, certainly. But then he pulls the gun and he says, quote, don't you boys try to do anything. And then I'll just read another quote from a book about this, quote, there are conflicting reports about what happened next. Some witnesses said Palmer deliberately shot Croson, who was one of the guards, for revenge. Others claimed Croson fired the first shot. Another source quoted Palmer as saying, I told the guards to sit still, don't move, and there won't be no shooting. I really thought the guards would stick their hands up. What was I to do? So regardless of how it goes down, Palmer shoots Croson, one of the guards.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Croson, he's mortally wounded.
Okay.
But he is on horseback at this point.
Oh,
The guards are all on horseback.
That paints a different picture. Okay.
Yeah. Sorry. I'm sorry. I didn't agree with that. I just thought you had like internalized Cool Hand. Look, you said earlier the Paul Newman thing. I thought you knew how this works.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. Yeah. Yes.
Man, Cool Hand Luke's a great movie, huh?
Oh, we should, that's put on the list.
Should be on. Okay, that's awesome. So he's on horseback, and so he turns and he rides back toward the prison. He's going to alert the rest of the guards. Now, the second guard he was talking to, he pulls his gun, of course, and he shoots at Palmer. He just grazes him, though.
Mm-hmm.
And so Palmer returns fire, and he shoots the guard, and he hits him right on the hip. I think he hits him, like, in the gun belt.
Whoa.
And then the guard falls off his horse, and he breaks his leg. So that's a lucky break.
This plan is going I can imagine, like, this is exactly how it was drawn up. Precisely how it was drawn up. And then I want you to pull your gun, and then when the first guard runs away on his horse, I want you to shoot the other one in the butt. That's what I want you to do.
We want to have a lot of fun when we tell people how this went. Reporters are going to be interested, and let's do this right. Now, meanwhile, so Hamilton has the other gun, right? He runs over, and he's trying to help, but he's just so excited that when he grabs his gun, he fumbles with it. And he bobbles the gun and then accidentally ejects the clip.
Oh, no.
So he's useless. So Clyde can see this from where he is outside the fence. And he's like, God damn it. So he takes that as his cue. Clyde stands up and he starts firing his automatic rifle into the scene. So Clyde is firing over the heads of everyone in the field. He's obviously not going to try to hit the prisoners.
Right. Yeah.
Right. So he's just firing it in the air. When he does that, everyone hits the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Guards, inmates, everyone is like on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Then Bonnie blares the horn in the car. So the men, it's a signal for the men and also letting them know where the car is.
Mm-hmm.
And so then Palmer, Hamilton, Methvin, and Bybee, all four of our guys, they all just haul ass toward the car and they slip through the fence and they load into the car. Clyde jumps in behind them. And they're gone.
Okay. This is a very interesting assault on the prison here.
Yeah. It's the sum of all its parts will be eventually pretty good. If they do this once a week.
Yeah.
It's really going to
help. We're just going to run out of tire inner tubes sooner or later, guys. We're going to have to figure out something else.
I have to assume that Hamilton, the plan was for Hamilton to help, obviously, but like to kill all the guards so that all the prisoners could just get gone.
Okay.
And one prisoner
like a plan.
Actually.
That sounds like a plan.
I assume that was the real plan. And one other prisoner actually did make it out, but he hid like in the brush, I think, either just inside or just outside the fence. And then they found him, I mean, pretty easily.
Yeah.
So.
He's probably, can you guys leave your guns, please? No, you're going to take them in the car? them in the car. Great. Thanks so much.
I've covered this distance.
I'll just sharpen this stick here, I guess, for the next 5 minutes.
I'll just chew it until it's sharp and hope they give me the time. So they're gone. So it's a small jailbreak, but it's a jailbreak.
Sure.
And this for real is the last straw for the police.
Oh, okay.
I feel like I've said that sentence 9 times over the last 3 weeks.
Shooting one prison guard in the ass and two guys running away into a car. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
That is last straw.
Well, the prison guard who was shot, now he's dying. And so the prison chief, a man named Lee Simmons, he promises Croson, whatever, the guard, promises him that everyone involved in the breakout will be hunted down and killed.
Oh.
And he means it.
Mm-hmm.
So he reaches out to a former Texas Ranger named Frank Hamer. Now, I'm going to assume you've never heard of Frank Hamer.
No, but I've heard of the Texas Rangers.
Correct.
Specifically Chuck Norris.
Walker, yes.
Texas Ranger, yes.
And he always got his man and did it within 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right about.
Yeah. Walker and Trevette, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm,
indeed, yes. Only one
man.
Eventually, they taught Trevette how to do the roundhouse kick, which I thought was a little.
Fucking great.
Yeah.
Don't say anything other than perfect because you'll be wrong.
What a deep pull. Who is the sidekick off Walker, Texas Ranger? Very, very impressed. The deepest of pulls.
Oh man, that brain I could be that, so much smarter.
That brain cell has been sitting back there for 25 fucking
biting
years.
Biding its time.
Just like, I'm not letting this one up. I don't care how much calculus you need to learn. I am not letting go
absolutely
of this.
Someday
nugget.
I am going to need to know that James Trevette is the name of the sidekick in Walker, Texas Ranger.
The first name, too. Not just Trevette. The first name, too. Fuck. That's two cells back there.
Woo. Oh, my God. I just Googled it to make sure it was James Trevette, and yes, indeed it is.
No doubt.
Oh, man. What a wasted life I've led.
Oh, my gosh.
But you know what? My dad will be proud.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah. When he listens to this week's episode, I bet he will be like, oh, hey, this is great.
Oh, God. All right, well, so I can't remember Walker's first name, but yeah. I remember James Trevette. All right. So we're going to add the entire series to the watch list.
Obviously. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
I think a meaningful Ghost Plus edition would be you and me doing an episode recap, some episode recap of Walker, Texas Ranger. Speaking of that, I think Luna and I are going to try something. Mm. We're gonna give the first test tomorrow. I think we're going to go back and we're going to do, for Ghost Plus, an episode recap show where we go back and we recap all the episodes in the original Muppet Show.
Oh, okay.
And I'm pretty excited about it because the research is so fun. And Luna is designing some Muppety promos for it and some Muppety music to go in it. So that's happening, maybe. Unless it goes terribly in the test recording, and then it won't.
I mean, as long as you do the Alice Cooper episode, that's the best one.
The Alice Cooper episode is fantastic.
That is,
yeah.
That's one where you're like, of all people, I guess it does make sense. Alice Cooper would be the one that just like, yeah, Muppets? Yeah. I'm done. Yeah.
He's pretty theatrical. Yeah. So, anyway, so anyway, back to Frank Hamer. So Frank Hamer, I had never heard of him either, but he's the real deal. I read up on him a bit. He is literally, he's no joke. He's a Wyatt Earp level figure.
Oh, wow.
If there's not a movie about him, we should do that because. So here's just some highlights from his career. So Hamer, he fought against Mexican militias.
Okay.
Which seems dangerous.
Yeah.
He enforced prohibition for 1 year. and then I was like, I don't think so. He led the fight in Texas against the Ku Klux Klan.
Oh, okay.
That was good. And in 1930, he was part of a group that was protecting a black man who was on trial because he was accused of rape.
Mm-hmm.
And so this town got together to go
lynch this person.
Yeah. A mob surrounds a courthouse. Hamer's like, you're not coming in here. Like, justice is going to play out.
Mm-hmm.
Go home. And the mob said, no, thank you. And actually in that fight, Hamer shot and wounded two of his own community members to keep this man safe.
Wow.
I will say, unfortunately, the mob did manage to set fire to the courthouse.
Hmm.
The man who, the accused man had been, they'd locked him in the vault for his own safety.
Mm-hmm.
But when the building burned down, all that's left is the vault. And so they just kind of were there and got, so that didn't go great, but Hamer did the right thing. He tried his best to protect him. In 1928, Hamer put an end to a murder for hire ring.
Hey,
it turned out the Texas Bankers Association.
What?
Yeah. They were offering rewards of $5,000 for dead bank robbers.
Oh, okay. Like pelts.
Okay, like a pelts great way thing. To think. Yeah. Yes, like a pelts thing. Now, if that pelt is bigger than a coaster and you wear it, that might be illegal, but we're not sure yet. So the Bank Association, $5,000 for dead bank, which in today's money is crazy.
They're not worth that much nowadays.
This is the most Texas thing.
Yeah.
An extraordinary amount of money. Just go murder some people. Yeah. So there's a group of criminals, of course, who are setting up idiots to go into banks so they can get killed. And meanwhile, the gangsters are like calling the bank.
Is this like the guy that got the explosive strapped around his neck?
It's like that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's that guy. All right. Yeah.
Yeah. Except they're convincing these people to go rob a bank.
Right.
That guy seemed compelled. These guys are just like, hey, you should go rob the bank. And then they go rob the bank, and then they'll get on the phone and be like, hey, so you know, this guy's going to come rob this bank. Mm. And so they get the reward money for alerting the police about this upcoming bank robbery.
It seems like a decent deal.
It's, I mean, if you're into moral gray areas, I think you're going to make a lot of money.
If you live in a state that is so dumb that it is making itself completely open to this kind of situation, I think you got to do it.
Yeah, you think you got to just, yeah. I mean, you could, you know, I, yeah.
This is, okay. What year is this?
This is 1930.
Oh, dude, you have to do it this year. Like
is your year. This is solidly Great Depression.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Stock market just crashed. Great Depression. Dust Bowl firing up, and Texas is like, it's pelt season.
I mean, $5,000 for a dead bank robber in the Great Depression. Yeah. What did they think was going to happen?
You're going to convince your like destitute great uncle Chuck to go and be like, you know what? For the family, I'm going to do this. I'm going to go pretend to rob a bank or something. And then you turn me in and then everyone retires.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. So Hamer finds out this is going on and he explains it to the Bankers Association. Mm-hmm. He's like, hey, you got to stop this because innocent people are dying for profit.
Right. And the Bankers Association, they're probably like, what else are we supposed to spend money on?
I have a quote here, which is their response was, quote, any man that could be induced to participate in a bank robbery ought to be killed. It's just so fucking Texas. I just can't. So Hamer finds this unacceptable and he writes up a full expose. He calls it the Banker's Murder Machine. And he takes his expose to the press room of the state capitol and starts handing out copies.
Oh, wow.
To the reporters.
Whew.
So he's no joke. And he's good.
Minus the prohibition part. Kind of a fan.
He's only for one. Well, you know, he's only for 1 year.
He might have been like an intern or something. You don't know. It's.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to say. Hard to say. And so he's no joke. And the Texas Department of Corrections gets him to agree to finally, at last, put an end to Bonnie and Clyde.
Oof.
They had apparently approached a couple other Rangers first. Hamer at this point he's out of the game. They had approached a couple active Rangers first, but both of those guys said they wouldn't do it because they couldn't shoot a woman.
Oh, okay.
And that's obviously something that's going to have to happen if you're going
to, right?
If you're going to kill Bonnie and Clyde.
Mm. Yeah.
One of those is a Bonnie. But Hamer said, and Hamer is, to be clear, he's not excited about this, about the idea of shooting Bonnie. But he also, he's like, look, she's been indicted for murder. Like, they're killing a lot of people. Like, this has to stop.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to kill a woman. Mm-hmm. So excited about killing a man.
Yeah.
Don't want to kill a woman. but he says, yeah. He says, if that's mm-hmm. what it takes, like, I'll do it. And so Hamer's on the case. He starts chasing them down starting on February 10th, which is Aaron's birthday, by the way.
Oh, hey, that's nice.
Yeah, it's a nice way to celebrate.
Just a few days ago as the as we record.
That's right. Speaking of Aaron and Ghostbusters, all these organic Ghostbusters. Hi, Aaron is going to join me for a recording of a ghostie.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
So and I found out we're going to do a theater. And you know Aaron's background, of course.
Of course. Theater, indeed.
So I think it's going to be a bunch of fun. So, guys, Ghost Plus just keeps getting better and better. Wow. Anyway, so Hamer takes the case. And for weeks, he's on their tail. He knows that they drive. He knows that they're constantly driving. Mm-hmm. He knows that they're going all over the country. So, you know, it's grueling, but Hamer, he commits to it. He lives out of his car, basically. And he is like, he's one or two towns behind them, like constantly. Mm-hmm. Like he's very close to them, but it's hard because they're not announcing where they're going next, obviously, right, in any given town.
Yeah.
So stuff. Now on April 1st, before we get into this, I have notes about this somewhere later, but now's a good time to say it. So I've been thinking about, and I think we talked about, like, why are they driving so much? And why are they going to all these different states? So I learned the answer to that doing research for this episode, which was, at this point, murder was not a federal offense. It was a state offense.
Oh, interesting.
And the law was, if you are a police officer and you're following someone, you cannot follow them into another state. You can't follow them across state lines because you have no jurisdiction there.
Oh.
So if you arrested them there, it would do nothing anyway.
Right.
They would get off.
Right.
And so what's happening is Bonnie and Clyde are not just driving around. They are driving this route that, like, skirts the lines of the states. So
right.
They are always like a 15-minute max distance from a state line.
And
that's why they're always on the move.
That makes sense.
Which is pretty good. Makes sense. And I think, because it's before the FBI, but I think, like, so FBI, their first big kill was John Dillinger. Is that right?
That sounds right.
That sound right?
Yeah.
And Dillinger is alive during this time. So my hunch here is that Bonnie and Clyde, this whole shenanigans of them just being close to state lines, is actually what spurs this to be becoming a federal issue and probably the creation of the FBI.
Makes sense.
I would guess. Mm-hmm. It's not long after that they get Dillinger in Chicago.
No way to research that. But
I thought that maybe I would, but
that is for a different podcast, I'm afraid.
I mean, eventually we'll do a Dillinger episode.
Sure, of course.
And I'll probably find it then. So shut up. Anyway, so on April 1st, which is Easter Sunday, he is risen. 1934, Bonnie and Clyde pull off to the side of a road in Grapevine, Texas.
Ooh.
A pair of highway patrolmen eventually stop, thinking that they're having car trouble. But Bonnie and Clyde open fire on them, killing them both.
Oh, no.
So now the police are really, really taking it seriously. They killed both of them. So an eyewitness said that it was actually Bonnie who had fired the killing shots for both men.
Ooh.
Which, okay, so, well, okay, so when later questioned, Methvin, who was riding around with them.
They have the whole crew. That's right.
They have the whole crew. Yeah. Methvin said he was the one who fired the first shot after mistakenly assuming Clyde wanted the officers dead.
Okay.
So Methvin's story is like, I just assumed Clyde would want us to do this, so I started opening fire, and then Bonnie opened up fire too, and Bonnie's the one who's actually got both officers. Now, this story just absolutely blows up. Like, for some reason, bigger than anything they've done so far.
It's kind of an extreme one right there. Like, literally, two police officers that are like, hey, do you need help?
Can we help you with your car?
Yeah. I kill you in cold blood.
Yeah. So all four Dallas newspapers print the story. And they print the story as told by another eyewitness who was a farmer who was out in his fields who saw this, who said that Bonnie laughed at the way Patrolman Murphy's head, quote, bounced like a rubber ball when it hit the pavement.
Oh.
Now, this is probably not true.
Yeah.
But that was his story. He also told the police that he had found a cigar butt with tiny teeth marks, thinking that would signify it was Bonnie's. So this one eyewitness is painting Bonnie as this absolute fucking mad woman, right?
Okay.
And we don't think that's true either. We don't think there was a cigar at all on the scene. Like,
sure.
That seems to be fabricated out of whole cloth.
Right.
But that's what gets printed in the Dallas newspapers. And so now everyone is seeing Bonnie as more, up to this point, it's most people are like, oh, she's in love with this bad boy, and she's just being swept up in this. And now suddenly public sentiment is changing, and the tide is now like, oh, Bonnie's a cold-blooded murderer.
Mm-hmm. Which is a much better story. This is a much better story. Absolutely.
Way fun. And, like, of course, Bonnie's not innocent. Like, it's hard to feel too bad for her, but not quite as represented. And then, so the story's already huge, but then a few days later at the funeral of Patrolman Murphy, his fiance wears her wedding dress to the funeral. And that, of course, like, pictures of that are everywhere. Yeah.
She's
in mourning.
Right, but
he had a lot of money. Can we still do this? Yeah. I brought the dress just in case. I don't know.
I know you're supposed to wear black, but like, we got this depression on right now, and I could only afford the one dress.
We got this depression on. She's destined to be a real housewife of something.
Absolutely.
But she wears her wedding dress, and so this, of course, it's sensationalized again. You know, now the public's outraged. They're demanding the death of Clyde, but they're also now the public is like put Bonnie in the chair.
Mm-hmm.
Leader of the Highway Patrol, a man named L.G. Fares, he offers a $1,000 reward for Bonnie and Clyde.
Woo! 20% of what a dead bank robber costs.
What's crazy? So, and here I have the calculation. So it's about $20,000 today.
Okay, sure.
So a dead bank robber, $100,000 during a fucking depression? Yeah. I would send my neighbor into that bank. And as we've established on this show, I like him a lot.
Do you like your neighbor, or do you like retiring 5 years earlier?
Well, yeah.
It's a good point.
Man. And it's for specifically, quote, the quote here is $1,000 is, quote, for the dead bodies of the grapevine slayers.
Hmm. Okay.
It's not dead or alive. It's dead. The Texas governor at the time is a woman named Ma Ferguson.
Oh, a female governor of Texas?
Isn't that something? In the
1930s?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
What a forward-thinking state that is.
They're going to turn blue any year now. It's just a matter of time, right? Right?
Uh-huh.
Right?
Uh-huh.
So Ma Ferguson, she adds $1,000 to the reward.
Wow.
So now it's a $40,000 in today's money reward. Still not half as good as
not like a fully loaded minivan or anything, but still,
it's fine. It's fine. 5 days later, Clyde and Methvin murder a 60-year-old constable named Cal Campbell. This guy is...
A constable? Did he like come over from London or something?
We're showing this then. Ah!
Oh, no. Dick Van Dyke never impersonates me. Oh, no.
I don't know. But Cal Campbell... Now, this guy, obviously, he's old. He, like, should be retired, but he keeps working just because he likes the job, likes the work.
Right up until.
Sure. Yeah. It's all going great until just this little sliver at the end. I think constables at this point were mostly, like, you know, like, walking the streets and just, like.
Yeah, twirling the nightsticks.
You're twirling the nightsticks and telling the kids, like, keep your stick ball in the alley, boys.
Mm-hmm.
He's 60 years old. He's a father of, you know, not surprising. He's also a widower, and just a generally old man, like 60 years old, 1934 is crazy. So the public now, like, they're frothing at the fucking mouth.
Mm.
Like, everyone is, there was a bit of lore going around about them, like kind of a hero outlaw thing for a while. Yeah. And now that's gone.
Oof.
Everyone is like, this is. No way. These are the worst of the worst.
Mm-mm-mm.
Then they kidnap a police chief named Percy Boyd. They drive him across state lines into Kansas, where they cannot be followed for kidnapping a police chief. And they let him go, and they give him a clean shirt and a few dollars.
Hey.
And also a request from Bonnie to please tell the world that she does not smoke cigars.
My mom will be so embarrassed.
This is their version of a PR campaign. Let's kidnap police chief and just like, please, will you please tell everyone?
But what about the moitas? Oh, yeah, yeah, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, of
course. But not while smoking a cigar.
I am a lady.
So, now... It's interesting because, like, all of a sudden the tide's turning against Bonnie. And if they'd been captured a few months earlier, it's very possible, actually, that, like, Clyde's always going to get the chair for sure. Like, no question. But Bonnie would have she would have definitely avoided the chair. She might have even gotten, like, clemency from the whole thing because she was seen as, like, this, like,
right
victim in, yeah. in her own way. But that they're now they're both fucked. Like that's out the window. That's not coming back. And in fact, at this point, the Dallas Journal runs a cartoon on the editorial page showing an empty electric chair with a sign saying "Reserved, Clyde and Bonnie."
Hmm.
Cool, fun, light comic yeah. material. By May of 1934, Clyde has 16 warrants for his arrest.
Hmm. Okay.
And by this point, Hamer has assembled a whole posse of 6 men. He's got 4 Texas Rangers, including himself,
mm-hmm.
and 2 Louisiana Rangers.
Oh.
Now, Hamer is the first one who really picked up on this fact that they were, like, doing this circuit right. that skirts state lines. And let's see. So he blah, blah, blah. Yeah, he's plotting them out on the map. And he realizes he can basically predict their movements.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he doesn't know exactly where they're going. But he knows, like, they're going in a circle, basically.
Right.
And he figures this out. He's like, okay, we can work with this. So now he knows where the gang is going. And apparently their itinerary focuses on family visits.
Okay.
So like there's these points along this way. And it's like someone's family member, which again is so fucking, it's so stupid. So stupid. But looking at the map, next up is Methvin's family in Louisiana.
Okay.
And this ends up being actually a stroke of extraordinary luck for the police because little did the posse know, Methvin's mom's house is actually the place where the gang planned on reconnecting if they were ever separated.
Oh.
Lose each other, which might answer our question from last episode of how the fuck did this guy know how to find them? So they had a plan. So they said, if we ever get separated, we'll go to Methvin's mom's house in Louisiana. And it just so happened that Methvin had recently gotten separated from the gang after a shootout with mm-hmm. the law. And so they're all going to converge there. Now, the police don't know this.
Right.
It's a happy accident. But they do know they're probably going to Methvin's mom's place. And so Hamer goes out to stake out the house. And he finds Methvin is already there.
Oh, okay.
And so the posse goes in, heavily armed.
Mm-hmm.
And they arrest Methvin.
Hmm.
There's no drama, no shootout. They arrest him. On May 21st, he surrenders, and he tells the police that Bonnie and Clyde are on the way. He flips real fucking quick. He does not want to go back to prison. Please.
Yeah.
So the posse sets up an ambush along Louisiana State Highway 154. The plan is Methvin will drive his truck out on the road and he'll park it on the side of the road and just leave it there and with him in it, hoping that Bonnie and Clyde, when they come past, will see the truck, they'll recognize the truck, and they'll stop to be like, what's going on? Do you need help?
Yeah.
So they're all in place by 9 p.m. and they wait. They wait all night long. They wait all the next day. 24 hours later, still no Bonnie and Clyde.
Hmm.
The men want to leave.
Yeah.
But Hamer's like, no, it's not time. Like, we gotta wait this out. And they're like, sir, like, this guy's probably lying. They're probably not coming here. Like, it's probably not real info. Yeah.
I'm getting very tired of being in Louisiana, by the way.
Can we just go to Arkansas, please? All I want in my life is Arkansas. I never thought I'd say these words. Like, can we please just go to Arkansas? But Hamer says, no, we're going to wait. I think I have a hunch. This intel is good. I've been tracking their movements. This feels right. We're going to wait. So they do. So they keep watching. On 2.5 days later, on May 23rd, around 9:15 a.m., Hamer's like, okay, we should probably call it. Like, they're not coming. But just then they hear a car rolling down the road at very high speed. And it comes into view, and it is indeed Bonnie and Clyde.
Mm.
So Clyde is driving, and he does see Methvin in his truck on the side of the road, and he does slow down to see what's going on. all six lawmen jump out of the bushes and open fire.
Oh.
The first bullet is fired by Oakley. Now I'm realizing I didn't say which person Oakley is, but it doesn't matter. The very first bullet that is fired hits Clyde in the head, killing him instantly.
Oh. End of story.
That's a good shot, man. Anyway, thanks for listening. Yeah. No ghosts this time, but yeah, so that's one. And Hamer had told them, he said, the plan is, like, once you open fire, empty your magazines. Do not stop shooting until you are out of bullets. And some of the men were like, that seems a little excessive. And he said, it's not. this is from a statement by one of the men, one of the Rangers. Each of us six officers had a shotgun and an automatic rifle and pistols. We opened fire with the automatic rifles. They were emptied before the car got even with us. Then we used shotguns. There was smoke coming from the car, and it looked like it was on fire. After shooting the shotguns, we emptied the pistols at the car, which had passed us and ran into a ditch about 50 yards on down the road. It almost turned over. We kept shooting at the car even after it stopped. We weren't taking any chances. All in all, these men fired 130 rounds, and 112 of them hit the vehicle.
That's pretty good.
It is good.
I mean, it's a car, so you got to figure.
James Trevette's in this group. Yeah. Of course it's going to be good. Here's a picture of the car.
Oh, those are very good shots.
Yeah, I mean, it's like centered on the driver's side. Like, it's these guys are good.
No slouches. No slouches here.
Hamer knows what he's doing. So of those bullets, about 30 of them struck Bonnie and or Clyde.
Oh, okay.
The official coroner's report marked 17 bullet wounds on Clyde's body and 26 on Bonnie's.
Ooh.
I should say did not survive.
Oh, okay.
I didn't call that out, but each of them had several shots to the head. And one of the shots had severed Clyde's spinal column.
Okay.
So they went for it. The Undertaker had difficulty actually embalming the bodies because of all the bullet holes.
It's like the little Dutch boy. It's just
put a finger here, here. I need more fingers.
Yeah. Honey, can you come down here?
Inside the car, the police found an entire arsenal of automatic rifles, sawed-off shotguns, handguns, and several thousand rounds of ammunition, along with 15 sets of license plates from different states.
Oh.
And then here's an actual quote from Hamer. Quote, I hate to bust the cap on a woman, especially when she was sitting down. However, if it wouldn't have been her, it would have been us. When she's sitting down is so good. Once word spread that Bonnie and Clyde were dead, the people went fucking crazy. A whole swarm of folks descend on the crime scene.
Oh.
Now, they're in the middle of a pretty unpopulated spot. And so the police have to, like, the posse, they have to go and, like, get police and, you know, an ambulance and, like, whatever, the coroner to bring them out here. And they leave two of the posse members here to guard the scene. But they were not expecting how many people would arrive. One woman shows up. She starts cutting Bonnie's hair.
Look, this is a tough time in America.
You got to admit. Yeah. She's cutting off bloody locks of her hair, also pieces of her dress, and then later sells them as souvenirs. Hinton, one of the Rangers, had to stop a man from cutting off Clyde's trigger finger.
That'd be a good one, too.
I mean, that feels pretty
good. I'd have to imagine if you go on eBay right now, this is all on there right now. Has to be.
The Rangers put it up there themselves. Another man had opened his pocket knife and was reaching into the car because he wanted to cut off Clyde's left ear before he was stopped. So they're just, you know. Today, not far from the spot of the ambush, there's a museum called the Bonnie and Clyde Ambush Museum. And if you head to the actual site of their deaths, there's a good chance. Oh, here's where we get to the ghosts. Are you ready?
There's a ghost this week?
Yeah, it's been finally. A
fucking month.
It's just about. If you go to the side of the desk, there is a very good chance you will hear the sounds of ghostly gunfire and also the screams of Bonnie Parker as she is gunned down.
Whew. Wow.
Some people have driven down that road at night and seen a ghostly vision of the car itself with Bonnie and Clyde inside, and it is rocking on the axles as if it is being riddled with bullets.
Oh, wow. Oof.
Feels like a terrible thing to see. Some also claim to see ghosts of Bonnie and Clyde running into the nearby brush, making the escape in death that they were not able to make in life.
It seems extra. That's kids love running around the interstate. They
horny kids. Yeah. Horny kids on the interstate. There are, of course, floating orbs, as there always are. And some people even claim that when they look at photos taken at the site, the ghostly images of Bonnie and Clyde appear in the background.
Mm-hmm. Like with all the grotesque disfiguration or just...
Oh, yeah. Head gone.
Yeah.
That's how you know it's Clyde. Yeah. And then, you know, most of her hair cut off is how you know it's Bonnie.
Yeah. Bonnie's got a cigar with no lower jaw holding it in and most of her dress missing. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, my friend, is the absolutely worth it 3-part story of Bonnie and Clyde and their ghosts. What a journey, huh?
Indeed. Oh my gosh. I have so many questions, but there's no time.
I my initial plan was to condense it all into one episode, but there's just so many exciting things to talk about. Yeah. it just seemed worth it. And gosh, I bet our listeners will let us know if that payoff is worth the journey. Well, I guess that's probably going to do it for us tonight. So I should say that Is This a Ghost is a production of Smith Show Media. All the notes for the last month were taken by me, Clayton Smith. All the funny jokes from Patrick Dean. Our video editor is Jen Swanson. Our audio editor is Jeremy Montoya. Our social media manager is Jen Jones. Our merchandise is created in partnership with Stephen Luna and with Fox and Quill Studio. And please do consider joining Ghost Plus. It will be just a really great way to show us that you value the work that we do, because Patrick and I don't get any money from that. We don't take any money from that. We just put it back into the show. And sometimes our unpaid interns get $25 gift cards. And that's the money that comes out of. So if you want to support us, that's a great way to do it. And it's worth your while. There's some fun stuff over there. That's it for us this week. We'll see you again next time. Until then, I will say do not become a real sexy mass murdering outlaw couple, or else there's a real good chance we'll be talking about you next week on Is This a Ghost?